behind. Heading out for a new state of mind. New York town is calling to me. Dollaring off from the company. Wiring to me, Leo Harding. Alone in the White House, watching the sun come up on the morning of 1921.
No songs about presidents. Who am I kidding? It's our friend Al Stewart. Al Stewart, Mr. Year of the Cat, singing about Warren Gamaliel Harding. Happy President's Day. It's 4:30 on Downtown as we're joined on the telephone line by Chad Finn of the Boston Globe. Hello, Chad.
Hey, Rich. Is that straight from your Spotify playlist?
It's my once-a-year playlist. Yes, my President's Day playlist.
Yeah, I see. It's timely.
Right. Right. Anybody else? I'll tell you what, the guys at the Big Jab, they're not going to introduce you with a song about Warren Harding.
No, I just got Eli today. So, you know, Reagan's an ancient president to him. So we'll keep it modern.
There you go. How are you on this Monday?
No complaints. It's a day off. So short week, long weekend. Can't complain about any of that.
Did you stumble on the NBA All-Star game last night?
Yeah, I watched the first half. I'm a big NBA fan. It's probably my favorite league, favorite sport, but I need to rethink some things here. That was there's been complaints for years about them not playing any defense in that game, but that was next level stuff last night, where guy gets the ball in the lane and there's no contest on any shots at all. I don't think USA versus the world is quite the way to do it, because the world, it's not like a 50-50 split of, you know, the players that are there. There's still only six or seven foreign guys there this year. So I don't know if you could quite do it that way, but they got to come up with something better. And the highlight of the weekend was, Steph versus Sabrina. And the three-point contest overall was pretty good, but everything else was kind of a bust.
Boy, I watched some good basketball content earlier today, because the filmmaker Kristen Lapis is coming on with us tomorrow. She's got a great new movie. It's streaming on Prime, called Giannis, The Marvelous Journey, and it is terrific.
Oh, good. Good to hear about that. Does it include that his brother has a roster spot in the league because of him?
Yes, absolutely. That's all in there.
Oh, that's good. Giannis seems like such a great guy. I mean, it's pretty easy. You got to root against them. Usually a playoff series every year, it seems to shape up with the Celtics and Bucks, but have to kind of admire the way he's carried himself. And I don't know. I thought Kelly Olynyk was a pretty good draft pick at the time, but maybe they should have taken Giannis instead.
Yeah, it might have worked out a little differently for them there. Well, let's see. The Red Sox, they're picking up pitchers. Apparently the plan is to be really good in 2025, because they keep signing guys that are out for this season. Today it was Liam Hendricks to a two-year deal.
Yeah. I didn't realize he had Tommy John surgery. The last I heard of him, he came back from his cancer battle and pitched last year, which was a fantastic story, but I didn't realize he needed elbow surgery. Maybe he'll help in 2025 when they're hopefully battling for fourth place or somewhere higher, but it sure looks like a fifth-place team right now. The joke is the Netflix documentary they're doing probably should have gone to Portland, because that's where all the guys are that they're outing, and Beal and Meyer and Roman Anthony. Everything's sort of built up towards them promoting the future at the expense of what they currently have, and you can understand why. It's a pretty boring and certainly not a competitive roster compared to what we're used to with the Red Sox over the last 25 years.
And yet I'm always optimistic this time of year, and I still think if they were to go out and sign somebody, whether it's a Jordan Montgomery, maybe not a Hyunjin Ryu, but if they got a decent pitcher, I still think they would at least get themselves into the thick of the wild card race.
Yeah, I wanted Montgomery all along. He's not an ideal, perfect fit, because he's a ground ball pitcher, and there are going to be some questions about their infield defense. The story's fantastic, his shortstop. When he's healthy, but Devers just hasn't put it together at third base. Grissom's making a position change to second base and wasn't very good at shortstop. And then Cassis was underwhelming at first base. He was supposed to be a really good defensive player. scouting report said coming up through the minors, and he wasn't when he got here. Hopefully that changes this year. But so Montgomery, you know, wouldn't get the aid of the defense that he probably brings them to the peak of his abilities, but the guy who's going to throw 180 innings and they're going to be right around a 4 ERA and a workhorse, and that certainly would be a huge asset to this Red Sox pitching staff with all the questions that it has.
Any further news on what the radio team will look like this year for the Sox?
No. You know, Will Fleming will be back. It's just on a one-year contract. It certainly sounds like, though none of us have been able to confirm this with the Red Sox yet, but it sounds like the Red Sox, there's a good chance they'll be taking over radio rights next year because Odyssey, WES parent company, filed for bankruptcy, I believe, last month. So WEI has those rights now, but they're not committing contracts long term here to kind of see how things shake out. But I it was true what Mike Thomas, WEI's kind of market manager, the boss, told me when Will's job was posted, which was that they were looking for bench depth. They were looking for somebody else because at that point in time, they weren't sure how many Sean McDonough was going to do this year. Looks like he'll be doing about 20. Lou Maloney's going to do more than he did last year, somewhere between 60 and 75. But Castiglione really only does the road cities that he likes to go to, like Tampa, likes Cleveland because he has a history there, but won't be doing all of those. So they need somebody to fill in a pretty good chunk of games. So I think we might hear another voice beyond Will and Joe on play-by-play this year, but nobody other than, you know, more than one voice.
And did I see something last week about a George Soros-owned company investing some money in Odyssey? Good Lord, all the right-wingers will have to turn off the games.
Yeah, somebody joked in Pittsburgh, where the main sports station is there is owned by Odyssey, that one of their hosts is online deleting everything he's ever said about Soros right now. Because, it sounds like he's the main investor in Odyssey. A lot of sports radio hosts, not all of them, of course, but a lot of them tend to lean right and, couldn't resist some commentary here over the years.
We're talking with Chad Finn here on Downtown. Speaking of things that upset people on the right, the Super Bowl that nobody wanted got some pretty amazing ratings.
It did, yeah. The Taylor Swift effect was interesting because it really did not affect ratings during the season to a huge noticeable degree. I wrote about this in the week in the build-up to the Super Bowl. The first game where after she and Kelce becoming an item started to become this thing that was everywhere was the one they played against the Jets right after Aaron Rodgers got hurt. And that game was hugely anticipated. And actually, that weekend, the game that had the most female viewership was Patriots-Cowboys, where the Cowboys won by 35. So it took a while for that effect to build up. But in the Super Bowl, I had the largest women's female audience of all time. It was up 9% over last year. I think overall viewership was up 7%. So more women watched than the increase overall. So, the conspiracy theories are absolutely ridiculous. Some of the stupidest stuff I've ever heard in my life. But in the end, she did bring people that, weren't watching football before. But the main point I had in that original piece, though, is that women have always watched football, even in the 12 to 24 demographic. Everybody watches the NFL. It's easily the most popular thing in America for people to gather and watch as a group and watch consistently on television. Nothing else comes close to it.
Can we infer from Tom Brady's brilliant performance in the Dunkin's commercial how good he'll be as a Fox analyst? Is there any connection?
I think so. I think we're starting to see the real Tom Brady. He said he took this year hiatus from doing anything, and he said when he did that, it was to really prepare, to ask broadcasters, color analysts, ex-players, to pick their brains about how to be a good analyst, and seems to me he did that, because He's shown more of his personality, whether it's on, you know, in interviews that he's increasingly doing on his podcast with Jim Gray and Larry Fitzgerald during the season, this Don Kings thing, and especially on the Dynasty documentary that's showing on Apple TV Plus right now, where it's the most candid and funny that we've ever seen Brady. He's just kind of, you know, a lot of things still weigh on him a little bit, but he's really relaxed and he's really upfront about the good and the bad of his tenure with the Patriots. And we know, you know, the great reminder from this thing is 95% of it was awesome. So really good to see that version of Brady. And if he brings it to the broadcast booth, the way that he kind of carries himself, presents himself on these things, he's going to be really good at it.
What did you think of the Dynasty overall?
Loved it. Yeah, it's if you read the book had Kraft's fingerprints all over it, and especially Jonathan Kraft's. This does, too, to a lesser degree. It's really the Kraft aspect can be frustrating because kind of blame Bill for everything. and it's a lot of him saying, either telling stories that he's told before or saying, you know, I just kept these guys together for 20 years, you know, take a lot of credit for things, which he deserves in a lot of ways. But I don't think anybody looks at this as one third Brady, one third Belichick, one third Bill. Kraft is getting less of that pie. And because he wasn't on the field on game day, and a lot of this feels like him, you know, kind of trying to set his own personal record straight. But it's excellent. The thing that really makes it is some incredible footage that we haven't seen before, behind-the-scenes footage, pretty much anything you can imagine, whether after the Snow Bowl or after, you know, Spygate, you know, when Belichick basically tells the team to shut the bleep up and don't say a word about any of this and just concentrate on what you need to do. And the old players, the former players, they're hilarious, actually. Randy Moss is so funny. Ty Law is funny. Teddy Bruschi, Ernie Adams, you know, not next player, but, you know, knows more about what happened than anybody other than Belichick, probably. It's really, really good. It's really good. And you'll feel good about the, you know, the Dynasty after you watch it.
Excellent. Yeah, I've been saving that from a school vacation week, so I may check that out starting tonight. Chad Finn of the Boston Globe. Chad, great to visit as always. Hope the rest of your day and week go well, and we'll visit with you again soon.
All right, I'm going to go quietly think about my best president.
There you go. Again, Millard Fillmore. Do the research.
There you go. I'll do some homework.
All right. Thanks, Chad.
Here it is.
Chad Finn with us here on Downtown.